Hello, and welcome to Why Wars Happened, a weekly history podcast where we talk about what led to war in history. I'm your host, Emily Ross, and today we're going to be discussing the things that led to the American Revolution, with a focus on Virginia this season. Okay, so where we left off in the last episode was that King James I was in a desperate situation. He had a debt of about $312 million in today's dollars, or $245 million in today's pounds. He needed to pay off those debts. Some of it was debt that he inherited from Queen Elizabeth, who had borrowed a ton of money. Some of it was personal debt. He had shut down Parliament, and they were the only people who had the power to take tax money from the people of England and give it to the king so he could pay his debts. So poor King James sat on the throne of England and Scotland completely broke. The colony that was going to be set up in Virginia was supposed to find gold, wood, iron, and other supplies that would be brought back to England and sold there. The king would get a share of the profits, and this was a simple way for him to raise money outside of Parliament. So that brings us to the people who were actually going to set up and pay for the starting costs of the colony in Virginia. You may have heard about the Virginia Company, maybe from that Pocahontas song at the beginning of the movie. But basically, a bunch of dudes got together in London and asked people for money to pay for the ships, the crew, and the supplies that would be needed to take care of the colonists on the journey. The colonists were going to find gold and iron and wood and a ton of other things. They would send all of this back to England, and people in England would sell it, and if you had given money to the colonists to journey there and set up the colony, you would get a share of the money on everything that was sold. Sounds like a pretty sweet deal. Why not give the money if you had it? And people did give money. And once the Virginia Company had money, they got captains, a crew, and colonists together to make the journey. They even got three ships. So let's go, right? Not exactly. A lot of people had been making journeys like that to the Americas for over 100 years at this point. They were just random groups of people that came and went, and sometimes they had the blessing of their king or queen in their country. But what these guys wanted was to stay there. They wanted to set up a piece of land and say that it was permanently English land. They would get married, have babies, establish towns and cities. They weren't coming back. But they didn't want to be there on their own as just a random group of people. So what they needed was a document from the king saying that they had the full power of England, and that whatever land they settled was in fact English, and that the English government would fight for them and protect them. Anyone harming them would have to answer to the government of England. This is really important to the American Revolution. This document from the king gave a legal reason for the American Revolution over 160 years later. The document said that every English colonist that set foot in the colony was an English citizen and held the same rights as all English citizens, just as though they were in England itself. It made the land in Virginia legally the same as the soil in England. 169 years later, the Virginia colonists would be like, "Hey, so you remember how you said that we were the same as English citizens and we kept all of our rights as though we were on actual English soil? Well, one of those rights is to have a say in our government elections and to have a say in what taxes we pay." Okay, so back to this time in the early 1600s. Spain and France and other countries had been doing this for a long time. It wasn't just an English thing. The document that was signed was called a charter. The king and queen of Spain signed a charter for lands claimed by Spain. The king of France signed a charter for lands claimed by France. And now the king of England signed a charter for lands claimed by England. The charter also said that the king would select some people in England to be in charge of the colony. Yeah, all the way across the ocean. He set up a council in England that the colonists had to report to and listen to. That council in England had to answer to the king. So the king was still really the one in charge. He just had people beneath him running the day-to-day things and making decisions that he didn't want to deal with. In addition to the council in England, the charter said that there would be another council in Virginia that would handle things that needed more immediate attention. Still, every decision they made had to be approved by the guys across the ocean, the guys in England. Those guys in England chose the people that would be on the Virginia Council. It was kind of like having three bosses. There was a council in Virginia that ran things there, then the bigger boss above them in England that was a council, then the mega boss on top of everyone, who was the king. Nobody was elected. The king chose people for a council in England. The people on the English council chose the people for the council in Virginia. I don't know, I'm saying a lot of things about councils here, but the point is that the people that were on the council in Virginia and the people on the council in England were in no way answerable to the people. This affected things like crime. The people in Virginia could be tried by the council if they were accused of a crime. And if they wanted to appeal the decision, they had to write to England and wait for a response. It was kind of like a government, but it was owned by a company, the Virginia Company. So people couldn't do anything if the council sucked. Only the council could do something if the council sucked. And unfortunately, as you may already know, people. People in power usually get sick with that power and become monsters. So the council did suck. Sometimes the council ruled over the colonists with a cruelty that seemed right out of a horror movie. The only thing that could stop it was the council itself, or the council in England, if word could even reach them. And imagine all the time it took to send word, for them to debate in England about what to do, and then to send a response to Virginia. That would take forever, and a lot of the things that were happening didn't get word to England at all. So only the council in Virginia was really able to stop the council in Virginia. There's an enormous amount of thrilling drama that happened with that, and we'll get to that soon. So the council in Virginia was a bunch of dudes chosen by the council in England. They also chose a president to lead the council. The president of the council was basically the same as the other council members, except for in times when there were equal votes for or against something, and someone needed to cast an extra vote to break the tie. The president could do this. He basically could vote a second time if this ever happened. He also banged the gavel and made sure meetings of the council didn't end up in shouting matches and disorder. Not much of a high position, but that double vote in case of a tie, that was power. The president of the council was only to serve for 1 year, and if, at the end of that year, the rest of the council didn't like how he was as a president, they could vote to change the president to someone else. If the council didn't like one of the other members of the council that wasn't the president, they could vote them out too. No trial, no specific charges, just a vote to get this guy we don't like out of here. In this way, there was a little voting going on. But just imagine that, these guys out there in the middle of nowhere, able to just be like, you know what? I don't like you. I'm going to make sure everyone else doesn't like you, and we're going to vote you out. And their parents, the council and king in England, weren't there to stop it. Not unless someone got word to them, and they were willing to wait months to see if England approved. We can imagine the types of cliques and drama on this side and that side that happened in these situations. So the government that was set up for the new colony wasn't super strong. It had some issues, just like any new government does. Okay, so these colonists now had a charter from the king. They were going to keep all of their English civil rights when they landed in Virginia, and they were ready to go. They set sail at the very end of 1606. On their way to Virginia, they took 3 ships with them. On one of these ships was John Smith. John Smith was well known in Europe long before this trip. He was a captain, a soldier, and an adventurer. He had already been to many places around the world and already had relationships with people in different parts of the world. In Pocahontas, where they had John Smith speaking the native language, it wasn't really real. John Smith didn't speak the native language. But he would have used gestures and other means of communication, something he had a lot of practice doing in areas where he didn't speak the language. He was already kind of famous, like a Kardashian of adventure and exploration. There's a first-hand account of a 10-year-old boy who went on the trip to Virginia with him. The 10-year-old boy wrote about how awestruck he was when he first met John Smith. When they set sail for Virginia, John Smith was already a legend. Some of the other men on the trip were well-known, too. There must have been a lot of excitement and nervousness about who, out of all of those men, were chosen to rule once they got there. The Virginia Company and the council in England knew this, so they wrote down the names of the people they chose to be on the council in Virginia and the name of the president they chose to lead the council, and they locked all of those names away in a box. The box was not to be opened until the colonists reached Virginia. That way, it would avoid fighting about the choices on the way there. Except it didn't avoid this entirely. There was a lot of drama that unfolded between the ships on the way to Virginia. Some of the men started rumors that John Smith was planning on killing the council and making himself king of the colony when they got there. These rumors spread rapidly, and enough people believed them that they actually imprisoned John Smith in the decks below. They chained him to a floor and kept him cramped inside a hot, sweltering, tiny room for 13 weeks. The only relief he had was that 10-year-old boy who served him food, water, and kept him company. When the ship stopped for food, the kid would look out through the portholes and describe Caribbean islands to Smith. He wasn't allowed to even stretch his legs or take in fresh air, something the boy was highly distressed about. But they finally made it to Virginia, where they held a trial to see whether John Smith actually had been planning on killing the council and making himself king of the colony. They decided that, in fact, he had not planned this, and they let him go. So the colony started off with tension before they even reached the shores of Virginia. And this tension wasn't about gold, or riches, or who gets what land. It was about how the colony was going to be governed. That's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. Join us next week when we discuss what happened with John Smith, the disorder and chaos brought by the fighting among the council in Virginia, and the path that led to the colony being ruled over by a governor. Subscribe so you don't miss the next episode, and comment your thoughts on this episode below. See you next time on Why Wars Happened.